This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week, we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Eli Koslansky.
And we're your hosts for Art Moves. Now, today we're going to be talking to Karen Brooks Hopkins. She is the president emerita of the Brooklyn Academy of Music. She's the senior advisor of the Onassis Foundation. And why we're here today is to talk about BAM, and then it hit me. She is the author. It's a fantastic book. You can get it on Audible. That's right, Karen?
You can get it a hard copy through Powerhouse Books and Amazon and anywhere that you buy your books, as well as Audible for the audio version.
So good to be talking with you, Karen.
Thank you.
The Billie Holiday Theater was given the National Medal of Honor for the Arts by President Joe Biden and, of course, the National Endowment for the Arts. And it was unbelievable. And I'm sharing this story because our guest has a similar story about when her organization that she represented was the recipient of the same honor. It's Karen Brooks Hopkins. And we are so happy that you are with us, Karen.
It's incredible. I mean, it's great for Brooklyn. It's great for the arts. And we both know it's a thrilling moment to have your organization be recognized at such a high level.
And I also would say that as chair of the Billie Holiday Theater, and I've chaired a lot of organizations in Brooklyn, so I just saw that as a culmination of all the art and cultural groups that I have been a part of. I mean, it is thrilling. I mean, you know, but we're going to move on because I could stay on this. But you wrote a chapter about that in your book, BAM, and Then It Hit Me. And first, I want to say what a wonderful read that is. First of all, just the language, it sounds just like you. I was surprised how much I really just enjoyed it because I could hear your voice throughout. And then the pictures were amazing. The photographs were just amazing. You want to talk a little bit about the book and then maybe that chapter somewhat?
Yes. So I retired from BAM in 2015 and decided that it was really important to tell our story. So for 4 years, I worked on the book, and my publisher, Powerhouse Books, right here in Brooklyn, helped me to put this together. And of course, it's an astonishing thing when you have a small publisher that allows you to create a book that has 300 pictures in it. Mm-hmm. But I told the story of my 36-year career at BAM, and essentially there are three strands of content in the book. Artists and celebrities, you know, BAM is America's oldest performing arts center. It opened its doors in 1861 in Brooklyn Heights, burns to the ground in 1903, and then is rebuilt here in Fort Greene, Brooklyn in 1907. And it's an amazing story of artists and celebrities, and that's one part of the book. The second part of the book is about fundraising and leadership.
And that's excellent. And we're going to dig into that somewhat.
But, you know, fundraising was my life at BAM. And
you're iconic at it. I mean, everybody loves you. I mean, you're the one. You guess.
It's also the lifeblood of an organization.
I had to really focus on that. And so there's a lot in the book that covers that topic. And then the last part of the book is really about Brooklyn. And it really delves into how arts and culture can power up successful, inclusive neighborhoods. And I want to make that point now, as I sit here in this recording studio at BRIC, one of the 9 institutions in the core of the Brooklyn Cultural District. The Brooklyn Cultural District has another 55 organizations surrounding the core. That is a lot of art and culture, and that is really exciting. And I believe that BAM was at the center
Absolutely.
Of making that happen.
Talk about that a bit, because there was something called the BAM Local Development Corporation, right?
Oh, so it doesn't exist anymore.
Well, it's morphed, right?
It's morphed.
The BAM Local Development Corporation was really devised in the early 80s to use arts and culture as a means of enhancing the neighborhood and bringing more arts and culture in. And over the years, things happened, things didn't happen. There was funding, there was no funding. And then finally, the district came together in a kind of organic way. It took 40 years practically to do it. And then the city decided to create the Downtown Brooklyn Partnership,
right,
which was focused on cultural development, educational development, commercial development, and residential development. So at that point, when that organization was created, they absorbed the BAM LDC, since cultural development became one of the mandates of the partnership.
Right, so a bigger organization. So let me ask you something, Chris. I've been a fan of BAM. I've been going to performances for decades, especially Next Wave. And I know that part of the current thinking is there's a need to broaden the audience of it. And some people, you know, sometimes have a trouble with, but, you know, I guess it's because it's so avant-garde and edgy, which is part of the brand. But also, it seems to me they want to sort of broaden the audience. It's almost like a push and pull between those two.
Well,
can you talk a little bit about that?
You know, the idea of creating a season and making it interesting is a complicated affair. But the concept of putting together blockbusters and discoveries is really how we worked. So we would try to take things that were somewhat known within a BAM context and then use those things to encourage the audience to be introduced to new things. And this worked out very well for us. And by the time I left BAM, we had an annual audience of over 750,000 people. We were multidisciplinary, multicultural, kind of multinational, multi-everything. And in this way, there were different entry points. People could find their way into BAM, whether it was through the Next Wave Festival or Dance Africa or the movies,
right,
or anything,
mm-hmm,
we were doing. And then the idea was to get them to go deeper and find their way into more BAM. So customer loyalty was a big part of our strategy and part of the way that we built a diverse and young audience.
And I would say when it came to the Next Wave, though, in your book, you talked about how that was really forging the Brooklyn brand.
When I started at BAM in 1979, we used to tell a funny story, or a funny story was told about BAM that said a person in Manhattan would say, "Where is such and such an event playing?" And the other person would say, "Well, it's at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, and then it'll be in London." Mm-hmm. And the person would say, "Okay, I'll see it in London." They were not crossing that bridge. And we decided that rather than try to struggle with that situation, our plan was to double down on Brooklyn.
Right.
And to take
right.
advantage of the fact that because we were in Brooklyn, no one cared what we were doing. So that meant we were free to do whatever we wanted as long as we could figure out how to pay for it. And that was my job, figure
right.
out how to pay for it. But the idea of that meant that we could be original, that we could forge a path where no one else had gone. And the idea of conceiving a very tightly branded institution, one that was doing things that you couldn't see anywhere else in New York, and then we could control the ticket inventory. So it made it seem as though things were a tight ticket, even if they really weren't. Because we were saying, let's only do four performances of this, and that'll really push the audience to come. And that created a kind of buzz and energy. And this idea of being edgy, risk-taking, cool, trying things that hadn't been tried before, bringing things in that were new voices, set the table for Brand Brooklyn.
Exactly.
And that
right.
is where right. we are today. And it's an amazing transition in terms of how Brooklyn is perceived today as the coolest neighborhood on the planet. That was certainly not the case when I started. And I think that BAM and the other arts and cultural organizations that partnered with us here were part of driving that brand.
I was at a museum conference and they had the guys from Gloucester, Scotland, who became the cultural capital of the world. I don't know if you're familiar with that program.
I am familiar,
yeah,
yes.
Every year they give 35 yeah. million euros to one city
yep.
to do cultural projects. And they won it. And I'm sitting there thinking, Gloucester, you know, of all places. But the guys who put it together were brilliant. But the way they did it is they got all the cultural organizations working as a unit to present this brilliant plan. This is what I'm referring to.
Well, yes. And that is why the district itself is such a phenomenon. The
yeah.
next stage for the district would be to actually activate it together once or twice a year. I mean, what would
Absolutely.
Happen?
Absolutely. Can you imagine that? Activating all
well,
together.
This is what I'm saying,
yes. around
right.
a theme or an idea
right.
that,
this
was,
what I'm
that was common.
Yeah.
That,
he was onto something.
Yeah, that
I'm
everybody
onto something.
Could
okay.
do that. I mean, that is what can happen. You know, we We do collaborate with a lot of our sister organizations in the district. But if there was an intentional, say, festival where the 9 organizations and then the 55 all work together around a certain theme or idea that everyone believed in, you would be able to enhance the brand and go even deeper. There's no question that you can always do more. And the thing with many of these cultural capital cities is that they are small. They are not well known, many of them, or some of them have been on hard times, and they get a chance to come together and really take what they have and their best cultural institutions and their great message about who they are and blow it out all the way.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM.
We're talking to the fascinating Karen Brooks Hopkins.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Harvey, right? Because in your book, you make no bones about it. He was a visionary, and he brought you in, and he loved you because you worked hard and you really resonated. Talk a little bit about him and his impact on your career.
You know, Harvey was a complicated person in the sense that I would say that Harvey would push you and push you and push you. And then when you said, "Harvey, you're really pushing me," he'd say yes and then push you a little harder.
Oh,
that was the way that it went.
He's tough. Oh, goodness. Oh, goodness.
But he made us great. You know, he had great ambitions for BAM, great ambitions for Brooklyn. He was born in Brooklyn. He went to Erasmus Hall High School. Mm-hmm. He knew the neighborhood.
And he was a dancer, which I found
really
interesting.
He was a dancer. Yeah. But he also was an expert in all art forms. He was a very uniquely talented person, a hard worker, and he wasn't afraid to bring other talented people around him. He didn't just need to, you know, do everything himself. Mm-hmm. He assembled a great group of people, and we were all together for 30 plus years. I mean, that was another thing that kind of made the moment for BAM amazing. Between Harvey's tenure and Joe Melillo and I succeeded him, Harvey was both president and executive producer. When we took over, I was president, Joe was executive producer and artistic director. And when you look at the double tenure of Harvey's years at BAM and our years at BAM, you almost have a 50-year run.
Right.
That is a remarkable thing. When you think of the way that everybody jumps around these days, the idea of a group of people staying together for half a century.
But look at what they were able to build, too. I mean, I'm thinking about the investment of himself that he made and how he was so willing to invest in other artists. I thought that was pretty amazing.
He loved artists. And when he found his favorites, Tina Bausch, Peter Brook,
right,
Robert Wilson, Chuck Davis. I mean, when he found the ones that were the ones, they were with BAM for life. So after he retired, Joe and I said, there is certainly no reason for us not to continue to work with these great artists who were BAM artists. They weren't just Harvey's artists. They're BAM artists. And so we continued. In fact, last week, the Pina Bausch Company was on stage at the BAM Howard Gilman Opera House, probably for the 20th time.
Oh, yeah.
Since the first time they came in 1984.
I saw a performance of them before the pandemic.
So these relationships have gone on for a really long time. And I think that strengthened the brand. It strengthened the connection between our donors and our audiences and the institution. A lot of real loyalty and feeling over many, many years.
And I want to speak about one donor that you spoke about, Howard Gilman. You want to tell that story to our listeners?
Well, Howard Gilman was a brilliant art collector. He was a great theater aficionado and love dance. He was very close to Mikhail Baryshnikov and Mark Morris and many, many other artists. And luckily, through his photography consultant, a man named Pierre Proxine, he was introduced to BAM. And he fell in love with the Next Wave Festival. He became connected with our institution and became one of our earliest and most prolific and serious supporters. And so when he passed away in his early 70s, I went to the foundation that bears his name and asked them if they would consider naming the Opera House for Howard.
I know that was a wonderful story.
And it was kind of a great thing. They said yes, and that was a huge game changer for us. It was a $5 million contribution, and that helped really put BAM on the map in terms of serious fundraising and in terms of the Opera House having a name.
So talk about fundraising, you know, and as you know, probably know, everybody knows that a lot of institutions are struggling with these questionable organizations like SACA, blah, blah, blah. But so one of the ones that gave money was Philip Morris, was a cigarette company.
Years ago.
No, not now, of course. But so how did you get backlash from that? How did you deal with that?
I did get some backlash from that, but I would tell you that Philip Morris, like, there would not have been a Next Wave Festival had there not been support from Philip Morris at the beginning. And they supported the Next Wave Festival for over 25 years until they moved out of New York City. And it was controversial, and I did take some heat and get some mail. But my feeling about it was always that this was a very profitable American company. They were making a product that was difficult but legal. Mm-hmm. And if they weren't taking their profits and giving them to places like BAM, then all that money would just go into the pockets of those who were already made wealthy
because of it. Right.
So I figured better the money should come to BAM and to other arts organizations rather than not. These are questions that every institutional leader has to struggle with.
Especially in the art world, though, right?
Yes.
Everybody's got all of this.
And it's become increasingly complicated
values.
Over the years.
Right.
This was a long time
ago.
Right. But every leader has to decide what they can handle. The biggest problem, though, that every leader has to deal with is where am I going to get the money?
So when you deal with that first,
that's your priority.
It puts the other questions, you know, in line with the issue of supporting the job, supporting the artist, taking care and managing hundreds of thousands of square feet of historic theatrical space. You know, we needed a lot of money to run a big institution like BAM.
Yes, it was a challenge.
And that was what I thought about morning, noon, and night.
So what I want to say is that, is there any like tips or something you could give to people and leaders in other cultural organizations about how to deal with these, you know, complex or, you know, somewhat controversial funders?
Well, you need the support of your board. You need to build a great and thoughtful and generous board. That is very important. And when you have controversy and conflict, you need to work it out with them and with your other members of your executive team, because you have to think through these questions and then make decisions
based on
what you think is the best way forward. Mm-hmm. Every day, like, there was one crisis or another. I will say there was never a boring day, but there was really also never an easy day. Gee, I had a relaxing day at the office today. That like never happened. So you're dealing with these issues and you try to get the best advice you can. And over the years you learn, you know, over the years you learn how to work fast, how to work efficiently, and how to make good decisions.
Sure, what to say.
And that's what you try to do. That's what you try to do.
There was a point that I really wanted to raise, which has to do with, okay, you are kind of selling the programs to funders. You seem to really dig deep, though, into the artistic aspects of the programs. Talk about that, meaning you knew Pina Bausch and you just really dug in in reading the book. I noticed that.
Well,
that you almost seemed as though you could have produced the show. I mean, that's how it's.
I could have in the sense that, I mean, Joe did a wonderful job for us. And of course, he and Harvey were running all over the world all the time. I was mainly in Brooklyn raising the money. But I come out of the arts. My background is theater. Mm-hmm. I grew up as a theater kid. My master's degree is in directing. My bachelor's degree is in theater. I love it. And even now, I was going to a Broadway show just 2 weeks ago and being on that in that block. And it was still just exciting. I felt the same thrill that I always felt. I felt that thrill also when I go to BAM and other arts organizations. You know, I love the art and the artists. And over the years, as I went to so many performances, the good, the bad, mm-hmm. the medium, you know, all kinds, as you go to more, you learn more. Mm-hmm. And the more you learn, the better of an audience member you are. So I was able to tell the BAM story because I understood the story and I spent time learning the story and becoming more acquainted with the artistic entities that we were bringing through the door. And that was how I was able to, I think, communicate with donors. There, you know, if you're going to be a great fundraiser, then you need a great program to fundraise for.
Absolutely.
And I felt that I was always inspired by what we were doing at BAM. And that helped me do a good job to bring the money in.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM, and we're talking to Karen Brooks Hopkins. Karen, this has just been such an interesting conversation, but you know, there's always ups and downs in 36 years, right? There are going to be really high points and some low points. And I remember the struggle that BAM was going through when you were called the plantation, and you mentioned that in your book as well. I want to know, how did that make you feel? And then how did you respond to those kinds of allegations and issues around the credibility of that depiction?
One night there was a town meeting in Brooklyn around something, and I went and stood at the back, and that was when I heard one of the panelists refer to BAM as a plantation.
Whoa.
And I was
really?
Ashamed. I was
what
ashamed.
What year was that?
Early 90s, late
early
80s.
90s. Yeah. Wow.
I was ashamed. I felt embarrassed. And I vowed at that moment that I would do everything I could as a leader to change it. And so we went to the Rockefeller Foundation. We got a grant to investigate the problem. We held focus groups. We did surveys. We talked to, you know, hundreds of people. We made a strategic plan. We created a strategic plan where we would address the problem from the board point of view, from the staff point of view, from the program point of view, and from the facilities point of view. And then we went about trying to change it so that we would be a better citizen, that we would have a more diverse program, a more diverse board, a more diverse staff at every level, including the executive level, and that we would reach out to audiences in order to create a more inclusivity also in the audience. And I think, you know, we didn't get all the way there. You never do. But we worked at it, we worked at it, and we worked at it. And I think we really changed people's opinions. And the last part of it was that we built the Fisher Building. We did that because so many artists and community groups felt that they did not have access to the facilities. And honestly, there was no way. A 2,000-seat opera house, an 800-seat theater, it wasn't possible because of cost,
Reynolds,
because
you can't
of
do it.
Everything.
Yeah, you just can't do it.
We need
right.
huge
right.
events to
right.
fill
right.
those theaters.
Right.
So the Fisher that had different labor contracts, it had a 250-seat flexible
important
space.
Important to understand the business, right?
Yeah.
100-seat studio space, a classroom space. The Fisher created a completely different set of circumstances as far as accessibility was concerned for smaller groups and community groups that wanted access to BAM, but of course were not able to afford the big theaters. And then we did something else that I think was really good. We created for rental rates, we had a for-profit rental rate, a not-for-profit rental rate, and a Brooklyn not-for-profit rental rate.
Wow.
Yeah. Now we're talking.
That was the best way to service the neighborhood. And that is what we did. So I think that we brought about a lot of change and tried to respond.
Yes. You know, I wanted to just, if some of the highlights, and let's talk a little bit about the Princess Diana story and what that meant to shifting how people were looking at Brooklyn at that time. Because I was pretty amazed that, was it Dan Rather you mentioned came and just...
We had...
exposed the underbelly of Brooklyn.
Yes,
it also
he
goes
did.
To the question of accessibility, too.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. Uh-huh. The Princess Diana Gala was one of those things in 1989 that completely catapulted the institution forward in terms of its stature in the world and in the cultural world. But we took some heat. There was one moment, I have a whole chapter about this in the book, where there was a lot of Princess Di stories.
Yeah,
but
it was great.
Thank you. But one of the moments were that this was before, you know, we had, this was before computers, you know. We were doing seating and we had some, you know, 2,000 people coming to this gala. And we understood that CBS News was going to do a segment on Princess Diana coming to Brooklyn.
This is good.
So we ran out and we bought one of those little TVs so that we could set it up. Everybody called their parents to say it's going to be on national television. Yes. You know, like we were excited.
Sounds like a bar mitzvah.
Yeah. Everybody was excited. And then this is Dan Rather, CBS Evening News, and he turns it on and then he says, "This is Brooklyn." And you see, like, people lying in the streets, garbage, empty buildings. It was like
Thanks.
Is she going here? So we were devastated. We couldn't even believe it. And of course, we had to deal with it, but we did take our revenge. CBS had a table for the gala.
Listen to this.
So we put their table all the way in the back, right
That's
next to the bathroom.
Them.
That's what we did.
Them.
That was our revenge.
Yeah, what do you expect from a boy from Texas?
Exactly. But I just remember when I first met you, because Princess Diana came before I started working for the company that I've now retired from, and you had spoken about her bobby pins, and that was really cool because it was like she was so she was normal. She was very accessible.
She was a lovely young woman, and I'm sorry that her life was cut short.
Yeah.
And but she certainly changed the game for us, and we all remember her. And
she
that
did
night
change
is
the
a
game.
Special night.
Yes, it was.
And we raised $1 million that night.
Can you imagine?
And that
what
was
that
a
meant?
Big deal. Yeah. In 1989, mm-hmm. it was especially a big deal.
Yeah, and I wanted to talk just a little bit about the cultural plan that you did for the Billie Holiday Theater. And the thing that I'm just still so inspired by the fact that we are a National Medal of Arts winner, and you did a cultural plan for the Billy.
I have been working with Bedford-Stuyvesant Restoration Corporation for over 30 years. We began partnering on a Dance Africa program for youth. I went over to see the Reverend Emma Jordan Simpson I think it was in the early 90s.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
And we began.
She worked at Bed-Stuy.
I've been on the Strategic Planning Committee of Bed-Stuy Restoration. We've been good colleagues and have had this partnership, as I say, that's been going on for over 25 years. And now that the New York Times has reported that Bedford-Stuyvesant Restoration Corporation will get, hopefully, through this new innovation campus designed by master architect David Ajay, we'll get three new amazing buildings that will all serve the community. So I think that this is another remarkable Brooklyn project and one that is going to put the borough on the map, and it evolves right out of the history of Bedford-Stuyvesant. It's just a continuation and a way of just making it larger and more important, which is where it deserves to be in the whole pantheon of cultural organizations in the United States.
Well, this is a great place to conclude, but thank you so much, because I feel inspiring to work with you. And it's also just inspiring to listen to you. You are a builder. So on behalf of Bedford-Stuyvesant Restoration Corporation and the Billie Holiday Theater, we are thrilled to be partnering with you on this.
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity. It's been great to work with you all these years, and lovely to be on your show.
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm sitting here saying, I should write a check.
Yes,
and so you should.
Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts, Tony Williams and Eli Kozlansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.